Did you get a chance to get outside yesterday? Yesterday was, I think, one of the most beautiful days I've seen in ages. I didn't get as much time outside as I would have liked. But the one thing that I noticed particularly was were the clouds, you know, the big puffy clouds on the blue sky. When I was a kid, I used to lay on my back at my folks' house, the house I grew up in, and I would lay on my back by the pine trees, and I would watch the clouds passing by. Did you ever do this? And you just watch straight up, and pretty soon it feels like you're moving and the clouds aren't? Did you ever do that? And then you stand up and you're kind of... But it occurred to me back then that there was a great creator, a God, that created all of this, created the sky and the moon and the stars and the trees and me and you and every blade of grass, created everything there is to experience in the world from the beginning of time until long after we go to the next place. And I remember thinking, if this God that created all of these things loves me and is interested in my life and everything that's going on around me, why would I not center everything in my life around this wonderful God? I was fortunate growing up. I had a really good childhood. No brothers and sisters, not that that's fortunate or unfortunate, but I spent a lot of time alone. So it gave me an opportunity, I think, to really hear the Holy Spirit speaking to me. And I grew up in the United Methodist Church in Berlin. That's where I was baptized and confirmed, and until the day I left for college, that's the church that I grew up in. And it was it was only a few blocks from my house, and it was the social center of my life. It was the social center, I think, back then, for most people. I'll tell you a little bit about the interior of the church. You know, most churches are designed like this, and it was, and on that side it had some stained glass windows, and on this side it had windows like this, but it had like solid doors, I would say, that went over that, so that those could be opened so that, you know, the breeze could come through, but otherwise they were closed. And I remember when I was little, spatial distance wasn't a thing for me. I couldn't understand that. So I used to think that Jesus and his disciples were meeting behind those doors. That's what was going on back there while we were having church. Because my mom would tell me, shh, be quiet. And I thought, oh yeah, we don't want to disturb the meeting that Jesus is having over there with his disciples. But it was, growing up, it was the social center of my life, and it was a place to be authentic, which, you know, school is tough. There's a lot of posturing that goes on in elementary and mid-high and high school, and you have to kind of be tough. But this was a place where I could be vulnerable. I could be myself. I could be silly. I could be ridiculous. I could ask questions and not feel stupid. I could admit mistakes because I was with a group of people who loved me unconditionally. It was a place for affirmation. It was all the things that church is supposed to be. And it helped me form my sense of self and my faith. This is what church is supposed to do. And what to me was exciting about the United Methodist Church in particular is that the more I learned about it and what it was, not just this little church in a small town, but connected globally, the more I fell in love with it. So the church did everything that it was intended to do for me in building my faith and being this village that helped raise me, but it was also, it gave me the foundation for what it meant to be a disciple in the world and a disciple in my own community. It gave me strength when I needed strength, and it built that foundation for my love for God, so much so that I couldn't keep it to myself. And that's what discipleship is. It's not just about coming together and praising God and singing songs, but it's about bursting forth into the community and the world with this joy and sharing it with others. So back then, you know, I remember Sundays being, you know, you have breakfast together as a family and you go to church, and then you come home and, you know, maybe dad naps and mom makes dinner and you watch Andy Griffith, as you will, and Wide, Wide World of Sports. And church was this central hub. It was important back then. I'm wearing my attendance pins. You don't see these anymore because I don't know that they exist. But it was a sense of pride to get, you know, every year to come up in front, and I had perfect attendance. I came every single Sunday. I remember running a 104 degree fever once when I was about 16 years old, and I was just sweating buckets, and my mom said, "You better stay home." And I said, "No, I won't get my attendance pin." It was important. And back then, you know, you went to church Sunday morning and you went to church Sunday night because that was youth group, and you went to church Wednesday evening because that was, back in the 70s, that was what people did. You know, it's like now for school or for sports, you know, you don't think about it. The kids get on the bus because that's what you do. And, you know, it's not, well, you know, I've got vacation, or I've got, you know, I want to sleep in. You just, that's what you do. And back then, that's what you did. And church is all the things that it was. And it still is. Church was a place where all were welcomed with open hearts and open minds and open doors. It was, and I'm not saying all churches are perfect, but the intention of church was to be a place that reflected the face of God, where people could come and be their authentic selves. It was a place to express a love for God through active discipleship, rolling up your sleeves and being Christ in the community and in the world. And to be a United Methodist meant, and still means, to be included in a diverse worldwide community of connected churches bound by faith and service to the world. It meant helping out at the local food pantry. And it meant helping out at school, and it meant helping your neighbor, and it also meant being part of the mission that reached around the world. And the United Methodist Church is very connected. Now, I know you can't see the specifics on this map, but you'll see little dots, and it talks about, on each of those little dots, it talks about the number of missions and connections around the world that are United Methodist. United Methodist hospitals and schools and orphanages and missions. And all the different things that UMCOR, the United Methodist Community Committee on Relief, has done throughout the world to bring relief in times of disaster, not only in the United States, but all sorts of places around the world. This past week, I'm trying to think of the specific dates. Has it been 2 weeks, annual conference? Yeah, it's been 2 weeks already. So we had annual conference at Middleton, at the Marriott in Middleton. Now we've had it different places, but this is what it looks like, annual conference. The United Methodist Church is structured in a way that around the world there are different conferences, and these different conferences are groups together. Like, for instance, Wisconsin has one conference. Okay, all the churches in Wisconsin are one conference, and it makes up several conferences of the United Methodist Church around the world. We have one bishop, and we have within the Wisconsin conference 5 districts, and each of those districts has a superintendent, and those superintendents kind of manage or oversee and resource the different churches in their district. Our bishop is He Soo Jung, and our district superintendent is Scott Carlson. And that name may sound familiar to you because he was for a long period of time the pastor at Sun Prairie United Methodist Church. Now, our conference office happens to be at Sun Prairie. Now, when I was working at the church in Wausau, it was a hike to have to go to the elite, prestigious place of the annual conference when I had a meeting, because it was a good, solid, several-hour drive. But now, I kind of enjoy just chugging over to the annual conference because it's right down the street. And every year, each conference from around the world is charged to meet annually. And they meet together, and it's every pastor is expected to attend, and per pastor, one layperson. So there's an equal amount of clergy and lay people. Our lay delegate is Doyle Erickson. So Doyle and I were at annual conference this past year, as was Rebecca Swenson, who was our youth delegate. And she went through kind of a series of applications. She had to write some things. She had to have all sorts of things in place so that she could be selected as a youth delegate. And they had a very important job at annual conference as well. So at annual conference, we met and go back to the previous slide. We met, and what you see up here, it was 4 days, and you see up here lots of people going like this. They're not raising their hands, actually. What they're doing is you'll see some folks that are going to be ordained as clergy. They have gone through their process and they're going to be ordained. That happens at annual conference. And the folks have been asked to bless them. So you'll see 700 hands around the room lifted in blessing to these folks that are going to start their pastoral ministry. You can go to the next slide. It was also a time to catch up with other clergy. And it's interesting, I call it the clergy fashion show, because for the ordination service, all the clergy process as we celebrate the ordination of new clergy. So you've got all these different robes and stoles, and it's exciting to see what the other clergy are wearing. And you might see some familiar faces here too. So it's a nice time to celebrate our ministry together. One of the things that they do at annual conference as well is they have a teaching session. And this year we were fortunate enough to have Adam Hamilton. And I don't know if that name sounds familiar to you, but I saw Rebecca smile. He actually is the pastor of Church of the Resurrection in Leawood, Kansas. And this church that was established in 1990, When was Crossroads established? 1990? Probably about the same time. 20,000 members. It's the largest United Methodist Church in the United States, starting out with 12 members and has grown to 20,000. And Adam Hamilton had a chance to share with us as pastors and as lay delegates some of his techniques and what has made this church successful in an atmosphere where, frankly, Christianity and church is declining. But he recognizes this too, and one of the things that he said is that we need to rethink church. And this is part of what we're looking at now in the United Methodist Church, is rethinking church. What does it look like for the next generation? You know, times have changed a lot. You know, church isn't what it used to be. It's not the best show in town anymore. It's not the social center of everybody's lives as it was in the 70s. Things are different. Working conditions have changed. I remember when I was a kid, we would go shopping during the week or on Saturday, because on Sunday morning, Main Street was rolled up. All the shops were closed. You didn't shop on Sunday. A lot of jobs, they didn't work on Sunday. And a lot of other industries, just, they didn't. But now you've got folks that are working Saturday nights or Sundays or a full weekend. You've also got people traveling a lot more. You've got sports that has taken center stage and is kind of taken up weekends. Families look different. My family, for instance, my daughter would not be able to earn these because she splits her time between myself and her dad, who lives 2 hours away. So the dynamics are much different than they were in our parents' church. There's also a sense of apathy that has kind of showered over our culture. You know, God just really isn't as exciting as God used to be. Now, we don't get all nervous about where we are in our spiritual life, because things, frankly, are going pretty good. So it's important to rethink church for our kids. Are they going to come to church when they graduate college and they move on with their life? Are they going to be here? Are they going to be the next leaders of the church? And are they going to bring their kids? It's a good question. One of the things that was particularly striking to me, one of the things that moved me quite significantly, was at this particular annual conference, there was a youth delegation. Now, there is every annual conference, granted. They run around and they do all sorts of stuff behind the scenes. But this particular year, they had a panel. So we had all of these youth, 13 of them, on this youth panel. And you see Rebecca sitting there in the white sweater. And you also see my daughter and I sitting in the second row. I'm wearing a dark gray blazer. And they answered two things. And help me out here, Rebecca, if I get this wrong. But one was the state of the church and what it means to this generation, and how we could do church in a way that would be engaging for them. And the second thing that they talked about was what they don't hear in church, What should we be talking about? What things are on their hearts and on their minds that we don't even touch in church? And I was so flabbergasted. And one of the things they talked about was technology and all the things we could be doing that would propel the church. And I said to Hannah, yeah, like I'm techie. And Hannah looked at me and some of these ideas, I mean, these young people were spitting out these ideas. And my 11-year-old daughter, I'm sorry, she's 12. My 12-year-old daughter leans over to me and she goes, Mom, I can do that stuff. And I'm thinking, how underutilized are our kids? Right? They just are. They're not the future leaders of our church. They are part of the leadership now. We are all in the family of the church. So this was an eye-opener to me, and we were talking about rethinking church. And the other thing that these kids want, they want what the United Methodist Church has wanted all along, social justice. They don't want to just come and sit in the pews and be entertained. They want social justice, and they want to be involved in propelling God's mission in the world. These kids aren't looking to get away from church. They're looking to be the church, and they're looking to be the church in a very tangible and significant way. There's a lot of hope here. We are in a place where the United Methodist Church is going to explode into the world. And in the next several months, I intend to go over the notes and think about, with a team, think about what this means for us. How we can take the best of what we've got now, the things that we love and appreciate, the things that make God real for us, and combine that with the things that excite the kids, our young people, about Jesus Christ. So I invite you with me to rethink church for the future. If you have ideas, if you feel charged up, if you feel like you want to be part of this, please make a note on your connection card so that we can connect in the near future. I'm excited to hear more about what Rebecca has to say, because she spent 4 days with these folks talking about the future of the church and what things get the kids all geeked up and excited about Jesus Christ, and we're going in a good direction. The United Methodist Church continues to be what it always was around the world, the hands and feet and voice of Christ. And it's going to continue to be that even bigger and better as we move forward. Amen.